podcast people, this is Sam, your Ask an Atheist tech guy, bringing you an explanation of what you're about to hear. As you probably heard from the website or on Facebook, Scan Studios in Seattle was closed on Sunday while they had an employee appreciation hoedown, and we were left to air a rerun, meaning we don't have a new episode for you guys this week. However, as you guys are the podcast community, you probably also know that we started the podcast with episode 5, and we received a bunch of emails asking us what we were going to do with the first 4 episodes. And this recording is the answer to that question. Occasionally, Scan Studio is closed on Sunday, and we can't produce an episode on that day. And when that occurs over the next few months, we're going to air one of the first 4 episodes. And I want to start with episode 4, because counting down is fun. So here is Why Do Atheists Have a Show? It originally aired on June 27th, 2010, and it stars, as much as an episode of Ask an Atheist can star anyone, Mike Gillis and myself. Finally, while this is the first time we're actually speaking on the podcast feed specifically, I promise you guys it won't be the last. Now that we've got a going website and we're pretty happy with the way things are going with the show, we're actually looking at how we can use the podcast feed to enhance the TV show and air some stuff we might not normally do. So watch this space. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, I don't know, recipes, feel free to email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. And now, our feature presentation, Why Do Atheists Have a Show?
Hello, welcome to the 4th ever episode of Ask an Atheist. Ask an Atheist, we are a live educational program every week on Scan TV here in Seattle. We are an educational program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. My name is Mike Gillis, and with me this week is Sam Mulvey. How are you doing, Sam?
Pretty good. Good afternoon.
All right. I think one of the big questions we're probably wondering is, what is an atheist?
And that's pretty simple. It's one of the easiest definitions to do when you're talking about philosophies or religions, and an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. Finn. That's it. It doesn't really say much about anything else. Now, socially and philosophically, there's usually things that come with that. Disbelief in the supernatural, disbelief in just religions in general. But really, the core definition is we don't believe in God, and that's it.
I think that for Western atheists, I think one of the big things that you'll see is that there really is this huge overlap between skepticism and atheism. And I think that for me, at least, and I think for Western atheists, atheism tends to be a subset of skepticism. I think that generally what you see is that this is just us applying skeptical principles to the God question. So it isn't, and the other thing too is I think there's a real misconception. A lot of people seem to think that atheists are asserting lack of existence of a God with 100% certainty. This just isn't the case. We don't know any more than anyone else does. I think that just the difference is I think it's just so unlikely and so improbable that I just don't think it's even worth talking about,
and
really.
I do believe we have a question that sort of addresses that a little later on.
Yeah, definitely.
Specifically, the overlap between skepticism and atheism. I know today you have the two of us. We're both skeptics and we're both atheists. So
indeed.
There is some significant overlap there.
All right, we have some quick announcements to make. Next week is the 4th of July, and that means the Northwest Free Thought Coalition is going to be doing their annual picnic, their summer potluck. This is going to be at Ravenna Park. That's at 2000 Northeast 58th Street in Ravenna, just south of the 20th Avenue pedestrian bridge. Potluck is from 1 to 3 p.m., a program at 3 o'clock, cleanup at 5. Should be a lot of fun and should be a lot of good food. So we expect to see you there. Since you might notice this happens during our time slot next week, we're actually going to be playing a rerun, so we won't be back live next week. But we will be back on the 11th.
We'll be partying.
I know that just a couple weeks ago, one of our producers, Casey Duran, actually made a challenge to Matt Dillahunty, who's one of the hosts of, I guess, our sister program, The Atheist Experience in Austin, Texas. I'd like to sweeten the pot of that. Casey wanted to challenge Matt to an Xbox Live game of Street Fighter II. Now, I will warn you, Matt, that Casey is really good at this game. I believe he's actually a world champion based on points. So this is a little thing that, and I know, Matt, we've talked to you through email, and you've sort of said that you might think that there'd be no real interest in people watching this. I disagree. So I'd like to ask people at you know, anyone who might be viewing us over the internet, to give them an email at tv@atheist.community.org, atheist-community.org, and let Matt know that you'd actually like to see this showdown. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And Matt, just to sweeten the pot, I'm prepared to offer up a prize for whoever wins this contest. I got this on eBay a few years ago, and I've given most of these away as gag gifts. But I actually have an audio cassette from 1988, Pat Robertson's presidential run. It's an audio cassette entitled "What I Will Do as President." I think it should be comedy gold, and I think that you'd like to do that at the very least. After we're done, we can rip an MP3 of that, and anyone can watch and listen to it. I imagine it's hilarious. So, all right, and also if anyone who has a local Free Thought Group is interested in getting mentioned on our show during our announcement segment, give us an email. Go to askanatheist.tv, and we'll see if we can get that. There we go, up on the screen. Just drop us an email there, or ask us any sort of question. But if you're a local Free Thought Group and you'd like to get a little bit of a mention, drop us an email, and we'll see what we can do. So let's talk about some news stories that are happening.
Okay. We'll start out with a bang. The first one, this comes from the Mother Nature Network, is where we originally found this, and the Pope is blaming atheists for global warming. And Pope Benedict, XVI, thinks the flying spaghetti monster and his noodly followers are causing global warming. In a recent speech about the environment, the pontiff blamed atheists for being greedy Earth Raiders, which sounds like an Atari 2600 game when I think about it.
Oh, yeah, tons of pixels.
Here's the full quote. "Is it not true that inconsiderate use of creation begins where God is marginalized, or also where his existence is denied? If the human creature's relationship with the Creator weakens, matter is reduced to egoistic possession, man becomes the final authority, and the objective of existence is reduced to a feverish race to possess the most possible." You can actually find a transcript of the entire speech at Catholic.net, and that's about really all there is to it. And I don't quite understand this. Is this just a way to get news off of what is in the news about the Catholic Church these days? There was a recent raid on a church
in Belgium.
Like a police raid, and the Belgian church is, you know, going along with it, but we're not seeing anything like that here.
Or at the Vatican either.
Or at the Vatican,
they can rush in there with their with a SWAT team, maybe roll a frash grenade and get in cardinal law.
Yeah.
See how well those guys in the pantaloons with the pikes can with hold off a SWAT team. I imagine not well.
And this is really difficult for me because I always felt, you know, ever since they did, was it an encyclical about the environment or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the Catholics did that, I thought that was the one subject matter that we could agree on and get together and work together on. Because most of the atheists that I've met tend to be very worried about the environment and our use of said resources. And here in America, as far as I've been able to tell, most of the people who are against, global warming deniers and any environmental problem whatsoever deniers usually come to that with a evangelical Christian sort of basis. And I thought that was like...
Yeah, there's a real irony in that. I think that if you look at the people who are screaming things like drill, baby, drill, it tends to be the people who deny global warming. And it's funny because they talk about how not believing in a God will make you more likely to look at the environment as a commodity to be exploited. And generally speaking, that comes from people with that evangelical base. Some of them almost outright. There was a congressman who, in a congressional hearing, I forget what his name was, some lunatic from somewhere, actually said that he did not believe in global warming for a biblical basis, saying that God had promised not to drown the earth again, therefore global warming could not be true.
But you don't have to drown the earth to drown New York.
Yes.
Doesn't take much. And that's the thing, is that a lot of the arguments I hear about this have to do with the upcoming end of the world, which mm-hmm. has been happening since about 70 AD, I think, we've been waiting for.
Yeah, we've been in the end times since the beginning times.
Welcome. And the thing is, I think they're basically just spamming the media to get attention away from the thing which everybody's thinking about. Because
yes.
A week before that, the Vatican officially endorsed the Blues Brothers movie. And this is from The Hollywood Reporter. And when Jake and Elwood Blues, the protagonists in John Landis' cult classic The Blues Brothers, claimed they were on a mission from God, the Catholic Church apparently took them at their word. In the 30th anniversary of the film's release, okay, I'm going to have some trouble with this, La Osservatore Romano.
Yeah, I think it means like Roman Observer.
Yeah.
I think it's actually a less reputable newspaper than the Hollywood Reporter.
The Roman New Times. The Vatican's official newspaper called the film a Catholic classic and said it should be recommended viewing for Catholics everywhere. The story goes on, but the great part of this is that with the recommendation, the Blues Brothers joins a list of dozens of films recommended by Catholic authorities that includes Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. Pretty good movie. Jesus of Nazareth from Franco Zeffirelli, Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ,
yeah,
and Victor Fleming's Joan of Arc, and, okay, I'm good with this, It's a Wonderful Life from Frank Capra. The Passion of the Christ, I saw it, and as far as I could tell, it looked like a snuff film to me.
It's a total Christian snuff film. It's like Faces of Death with Jesus in it.
It doesn't help that the first time I saw it was with the Benny Hill music on YouTube.
And yeah,
that really, I think, salted things for me. But I'm okay with them endorsing the Blues Brothers. It's a pretty good film.
I love the Blues Brothers. I think it's certain irony in the fact that they're actually endorsing a film with a number of Catholic criminals.
That's it. Everything they like about at least 70% of the film is let me put this aside.
Let's put this aside.
We actually have a caller.
Yeah, it looks like Chris from Seattle. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
What can I do for you today, Chris?
You know that crab on the back of automobiles with the finite state machine, FSM?
Yeah, we're aware.
Well, I'm not an atheist, but I would argue that you need to change that F to an I because evolution is not a finite process. It's an infinite process, and you're kind of mechanizing the animal by calling it a finite state machine. The Windows operating system is a finite state machine. An organism is an infinite state machine because evolution is an infinite process. I have a lot of friends who are atheists, and we argue about this all the time. You know, you're a machine, you're an elaborate collection of atoms moving through space and time. I would disagree.
I think on an individual basis, we're finite state machines. I mean, we take in energy and we excrete lesser energy.
And among other things.
Among other things and words. And we have a finite beginning and a finite end. And
how can you prove that?
Well, I mean, have you gone to a cemetery before?
No, I'm talking about the actual process of evolution. It's an ongoing...
Well, evolution is also not something that happens on an individual basis. This is something that happens on a species basis. This isn't change in individuals. It's change in a species over time.
You don't believe that you're evolving right now as we speak?
No, I'm pretty much what I am. My children might be something different than I am, albeit slightly, but it isn't like an animal grows wings to react to its environment. It's that there's a random mutation that's acted upon by non-random environmental pressures.
And by random, you mean something that is beyond the threshold of measurement? You can't measure
it? No, not beyond the threshold of measurement. I mean, there are weird random mutations. Some of them are beneficial. Some of them are less so.
Most of them do nothing.
Most of them do absolutely nothing until acted upon. Like, for instance, it may have no basis whatsoever whether this actually helps you or not until something jumps in to put pressure on it, and suddenly it becomes an advantage or a disadvantage. To whether you're going to survive and have offspring.
Yeah, but I would argue that the crab and you have an infinite choice. You know, the crab can go on the water, it can go on the rock, it could go off the rock. And thanks to evolution, those choices are infinite, whether you believe them or not.
Well, I think there's certain limitations to what a crab can do. I mean, obviously it can't choose to fly, it can't choose to write Hamlet.
Well, you're just using extreme scenarios.
Well, I'm just saying, I wouldn't say it's infinite. I think that there's certain things that human beings can't do.
You used the Windows operating system as an example of a finite state machine earlier, and if we extend that metaphor to include the Internet, the Windows operating system can go to websites, can check email, can do instant messaging based upon stimulus from other factors. So that seems analogous to me to the crab on the beach scenario. So does that, in that context, does the Windows operating system become an infinite state machine?
No, it will never become an infinite state machine because it's bounded by certain mechanisms. You know, see, the thing is, when Richard Dawkins uses evolution as evidence that there's no God.
To be fair, he doesn't say that. He simply says
that
with evolution, you don't need a God to explain the universe around you. He doesn't say that it's evidence against God. He said that several times.
The South Park episode that I saw was...
That's also a straw man of that. Actually, Dawkins thought the episode was funny, but he wished that he found somebody who knew how to do a real British accent to do his voice. I do think the animation of him looks pretty accurate, though.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I had fun.
Anyway, I want to thank you for your time, and I appreciate your show. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right.
That's a good one, because it's for me, the difference between the finite state machine and infinite state machine is based entirely on perspective. I mean, from what we know about cosmology and the evolution of the universe, it doesn't... I mean, we're looking at it at kind of a fade-away type thing, where matter just sort of stops. And if there's no matter, evolution as we know it can't really exist, and de facto, that would make evolution a finite state machine. I'd really have to think about that.
I don't know. I think that this is always going to be the question that we have, is that... Like, for instance, evolution happens because of the environment putting pressure on an organism. The question is, that when do we get to the point where we control so much of our own environment that it maybe affects us less? I don't know. I'd really like to ask a evolutionary biologist about this. If I had a chance to ask Richard Dawkins any question, it would be, what happens when humans can control their own environment to that degree? Oh, it looks like we have a call from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Tooferman.
Hey.
I think we have an email from you that we were going to answer later. What's up, Tooferman?
Oh, really? Do you? Thank you.
Yeah, we were going to answer that on the air. It makes a lot more sense than tossing it out there. What have you got for us?
I was actually calling with a little bit of opinion and a question.
Okay.
First, my opinion is, it's been stated on YouTube. I'm a YouTube user, and I've got a lot of education and information about atheism. I'm an atheist myself, and I think what's out there on YouTube is great.
Oh, I agree.
It's also been said that the Internet is where religion goes to die.
Oh, yeah, and Thunderfoot said that. That was great.
And I think that's a very good point. I think that not only atheists know this, theists know this as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting, because for me, it seems that religions die at transitions. And we've had the transition from a non-networked world or a limitedly networked world to a much more networked world where separate, disparate people have been able to connect and start talking to each other, which is why I'm in front of you today. But
I think that a lot of atheists will be watching this show and your sister show, ACA, in Texas, and that's a great show too, but I've noticed lately that there's less and less theists calling in, if you haven't noticed
that
either.
Yeah, they're kind of victims of their own success in that way. And I know that the guys at the AC actually did write a blog article about that, where they referred to their opening years as the days of milk and honey, where they could get crazy people to write in and, you know, why are there still monkeys, those kind of things. We're sort of an experiment in that way, where we're going to have to do this in a much more liberal environment. I know Austin is kind of a liberal oasis, but at the same time... they're surrounded by a lot of really, really crazy people.
I've heard it called a liberal enclave more than once.
Yeah. Right, my question specifically is, like, how do you intend, or do you think other atheists should spread atheism or make it at least more acceptable? I mean, we're past the days of atheists being baby eaters, so...
I don't know completely yet.
Not everywhere.
Really?
No, you still hear some crazy, crazy shit when you man a booth at any festival. I mean, like, for instance, I get approached by people all the time if I man a booth for, like, Seattle Atheists. People will say there's the craziest stuff and throw it at you. And this isn't just conservatives and the right-wing Christians. If you look at any article that, say, somebody like Greta Christina or Sam Harris writes...
Right.
And gets posted on something like Alternet. Read the, and this is not, Alternet, by the way, is a very liberal website. You'll see some of the same canards coming from those liberal responders that you'll hear from the 700 Club. So that's a good reason why we're on in Seattle at the same time. I think if I was going to say what could atheists do is, in a lot of ways, we're going to talk about this later, because our big show topic, of course, is why do we have a show in the first place.
Well, I think Seattle is very progressive. Anyway, I'm on the East Coast, but I've always had that in my mind that Seattle is progressive, at least musically.
it's a pretty progressive town, and I'm talking as somebody who lived in somewhere significantly not progressive its laws are kind of in the media right now, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
And to move here, it is definitely, it was a sea change for me. And and there's a Puget Sound area, and everywhere around it is pretty liberal. Down where you get by where I am in the South Sound, it's the transition sort of gets away. But Washington is a big state. And when you get over those mountains and get more east, it becomes a very different place.
Yeah, exactly. California and Oregon get the same thing.
They do.
Where there's like, I mean, actually Washington is a real extreme example because there actually is a physical barrier between the eastern and western. There's a Cascade Mountains. And you go over to, you cross the Cascade Mountains, you're essentially in West Idaho. And you really aren't in the Puget Sound area, even on the west side. You leave Seattle, the farther you go, the more significantly conservative it gets. So it's really the Seattle area, as you want to treat it, as like the epicenter. And then as you slowly move outward, you're going to see more and more conservatives and conservative religious people. But I think we're weird. We're not exactly Alabama.
Right.
I think that our conservatives here are less social conservatives who scream about religion, and they're more of the anti-government sort of
libertarianism.
Libertarian
is
sort
alive.
Of leaning well, ones.
Yeah.
I just have my eye on the national number. I'm just keeping my eye on the non-affiliated national number.
Oh, okay, I guess getting back to your main question, though.
Went from 12, I think, percent to around 16% in the last couple of years, and I'm hoping to see that in 20 in the next 5 years, 20%.
The error bars on that are going to be huge. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't speak out, so,
yeah.
You know, who knows what that number actually is.
It's hard to say.
All right, guys, well, thanks for taking my question.
Thank you.
If I may return to something, because this is an important thing for me, is that I think it's really transitions, sort of societal transitions, because there's sort of a renaissance of atheism going on right now. But there was a renaissance of non-theism in the 20th century as well. And it was sort of epitomized in the saying that God died in the trenches of World War I. And it took a new revival movement to bring Christianity as where we see it today.
Oh, yeah.
So I think every time we sort of get an increase in our understanding of ourselves, and I think we understood a little bit more about ourselves after a couple world wars, I don't know about you, there is sort of a transition away from theism.
Yeah, I know there have been different resurgences of religious fundamentalism. One of them was, you know, prohibition. That the Temperance Union was very overtly a Christian organization talking about the sin of alcohol use. And the same thing, too, the 70s, you get things like the moral majority. So these things do come in waves, the same way atheism comes in waves. I mean, that's kind of the same thing, was that new atheism isn't really new.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's nothing that Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and Sam Harris are saying that Robert Ingersoll didn't say 100 years ago. So even in tone, it's very, very similar. So, but I think the caller's right in the fact that religion goes to die in places where there's open exchanges of information, where a lot of times the power of religious organizations is pretty much guaranteed by their ability to control the flow of information. And I know I'm going to talk about that later, but Christians, it's very easy for them to only expose themselves to Christian opinion, only Christian music, only Christian talk radio, only Christian books. So
there is sort of a social thing there, is that when you've got this free exchange of information, and people are beginning to see things in a different way, and they transition away from religion, the people who are left over tend to be of a more fundamentalist bent. That's actually a well-documented, you lose the outsiders, is what they say.
Well, I think also any sort of resurgence of any sort of scientific advance, a lot of the time, those are the people who get the most vocal, like they feel like they have to protect society, like from moral collapse. And they almost use those exact terms when they talk about that. Like they really think. And I think it's sort of interesting is whenever you man a booth for Seattle Atheists or any organization, a lot of times people will approach you as if they've already been attacked. That simply asserting your existence is the first punch. And they just come up and start yelling at you a lot of the time. And I don't think they understand that they're starting that fight. That I haven't done anything to them other than be open about what I am, no more than them saying that their Christian is an attack on me. It's not.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it is. You're just sitting there, and it's a little different, I guess, in the parades a bit. But, I mean, when I sit at a booth, my whole point is just to be open. I'm not looking to put forth anything. Just wait for people to come and ask us questions. And they see something on TV they don't like, and they automatically assume that's my voice. So they come to me and just it's the rhetorical equivalent of a guy walking up to you and decking you.
Yeah, I think also it's worth mentioning, you mentioned the disparity of the numbers with people who are willing to call themselves atheists. The reason those numbers are so wide is that there really is this stigma against the word, that even when I was going through the process, and sometimes a very painful process of admitting that I'm an atheist, I tripped along the word agnostic, non-practicing Catholic. I know I've talked about that before. But that stigma really is there, and a lot of people who will say when asked, do you believe in a God, and they'll say no, they won't call themselves an atheist. It's like when President Obama mentioned non-believers during his inaugural address, even he doesn't want to go there. There clearly is this sort of word, and that's where you get groups that want to call themselves brights and other things. I really hate the term bright. I know that you do as well.
I'm not particularly fond. I mean, I understand why they came up with it, but I'm not fond of it. It seems a little Heidi to me.
Well, I think my beef with it is that it's arrogant and mincing, and I think that that's a weird combination of things. I think that it's mincing. It's dainty.
Okay.
And I think it's basically a euphemism. They don't like the A word, so they run away from it. I mean, this is pretty standard. Even people like Robert Ingersoll and Clarence Darrow, who are both very clearly atheists. I mean, you can't get much more atheist than Clarence Darrow saying, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose. This isn't somebody who's afraid of stating his belief. He still called himself an agnostic.
This is not new atheism, people. This has been around a while.
This is ye old atheism. So... another quick news story real quick. Speaking of growing attitudes, I think something I've really noticed is that a lot of people have this certain fallacy where we all like to believe that we are the silent majority, that we all represent much larger groups than you. And I think that a lot of liberal and moderate Christians do this as well. They like to believe that the fundamentalists are just this tiny little pocket of society that are just very, very loud. And that, no, actually, everyone is just like me. Well, atheists, we can't pretend that. We can't pretend that we're the majority. But Pew Research actually just did their latest poll about what people feel about war, terrorism, global trends. And, well, it appears that 41% of Americans believe that Jesus either definitely or probably will come back in the next 50 years, which is slightly less than the number of people who think that we're going to be hit by an asteroid.
So, what was that number, 41%? 41%
of Americans, and that's actually 54% of Protestants, 58% of white evangelicals, and 32% of Catholics. So this is not a small group. This is actually a pretty large group of people. It's not just Fred Phelps and his family of like 50 people. This is a lot of people who believe some
This is kind of news to me, so it's hitting a little hard, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is these people really do represent a lot of people. We actually have a call on the line. Stephanie from Redmond, are you on?
Yes. I just want to tell you, this is the first time I'm home, and I said, I'm going to see what's going on Channel 77. And I do like Roger, you know, the other person. And then you follow. And I said, this is kind of interesting. So I do like both of you, and I do agree, and there are some fanatic religious that are totally wacko nuts. And I do believe that the problems in the world are all these religions. My religion is better than yours. Oh, no, mine is better than yours. And especially those crazy people on television. I don't want to mention names.
And that's part of the reason why we're here.
Yeah, that our perspective just isn't heard in the media.
But let me tell you, I am Catholic, born Catholic, pot. I'm a very open-minded person.
Thank you.
And I don't believe God is coming and going to destroy everything. No, I don't believe that. I think we as humans, we're going to destroy ourselves.
Yeah, we're doing a pretty good job of it
far. I agree with you. We're doing a really good job. So we can go blaming God. Now, I believe we all are energy. And so you have to be open to science and religion. Now, I believe quite a bit in the universe.
Well, I guess I would disagree on that. I'm open to just about anything. But my acceptance of any claim is predicated on its ability to meet a burden of proof. And frankly, religious claims don't typically meet that burden of proof.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm Catholic, but I refuse to read the Bible. And one of the reasons I tell my friends, no, I don't read the Bible because there's nothing but violence in there. Yeah. Who wrote the book? I mean, the Bible.
I understand.
Man.
Yeah, there's a certain irony in the fact that the people who are really religious are the ones who object to violence and sex on TV, when their book is really nothing but violence and sex.
I know a lot of writers use it for a source.
Yeah, so I refused to read the Bible. Now, I brought up my children, and they're nice, wonderful, civil citizens, and I was blessed with that. And maybe because my mother and my father brought me up this way, be open-minded. And I do read quite a bit about all the religions. What are the major four religions? I read about, how do you pronounce it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Atheist.
Thank you. I read about it because I want to learn. I want to see. But the ones I can't stand are those people on television. Send me. Oh, and don't forget, buy the book and send me the dollar.
Oh, yeah. That's our big thing, is Jesus is a good selling point. Again, we want to thank you for giving us a call.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Good evening. And I really do like your program.
Hey, thank you. We do appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
Good day. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. You got any news for us?
No, I think that's it for me.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to our main topic then. This is something we had with a... Oh, do you want to do some emails real quick? Or?
Let's do a couple, yeah.
Let's do some emails. This is actually an email that came from the guy who called earlier. I forget what his name was. Like Twofiller? Twofer, I think.
Twofer Man.
Twofer Man. I'm sorry, you're going to have to forgive us. I think this was you. I think you would... But let's just assume that it's not, in case I'm
wrong.
Somebody wrote, this is to me and Libby, who is the host on the very first episode. Are you serious? You seem to suggest that without Dawkins, etc., that atheists are boring, sad, inept debaters. Now, with Harris and Dennett, you may have a point. Actually, I disagree. I think Harris is actually the best of the debaters. Do you think that Catholic theologians have a special debating powers atheists can't resist? I'd be willing to send Thunderfoot of YouTube fame or ACA's Matt Dillahunty for openers. Basically, I think that there was a misunderstanding. I didn't say that atheists outside of these famous two are inept debaters or sad or boring. I'd say they're exactly the opposite, especially people like Matt Dillahunty and Thunderfoot. But those are exactly the sort of people that aren't what the Catholic Church wants to debate when they open up and say, we want to open a channel with atheists. In fact, those are the exact opposite of the sort of people they have. They want sad, inept, and boring. They want somebody who goes in front of a camera and says, oh, I wish I had your faith. I'm so sad. I have this sad, meaningless life because I don't have Jesus the way you do. I wish I could believe.
That and I have a sneaking suspicion that Matt Dillahunty and Thunderfoot might be turned down.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're in the media and they debate atheism and they know what they're doing. So
yeah, that's the last thing they want.
We don't know the standard. I mean, do we count? We're new.
Yeah, we're new, but I think that I would say that they would say no to us too, simply because we're not going to immediately make this sort of concession, that this is a Harlem Globetrotters game with these guys, that they want to have somebody that they can look good against. And I made the comparison to what's his name? Sean Hannity's... token liberal Alan Combs last week, and I think that that's what they want. So anyways, we should probably just get on to the show topic at this point. This is something that I've been thinking about, and I actually did get an email about this earlier, that in the very first episode, I asked the question, what the hell are you watching? Why is there an atheist show on your TV? We defined atheism, but we never really got around to answering that question, and I think it's really important that I think people just don't understand why we feel the need to have a show. And I think it's important that we talk about that a bit.
Yeah, and I thought I might start with a bit of a personal anecdote. I've been an atheist for about 10 years, but I've only been, an activist about it in the community, talking to other atheists for 3 of those years. And that happened, I can tell you the exact date, and it's May 9th, 2007. And that was when Nightline had Face Off, Does God Exist? with the cast of the cartoon show, Way of the Master, mm-hmm. and then some folks I'd never heard of before called the Rational Response Squad, which at the time was Brian Sapient and Kelly. And the whole purpose of the show was that they were going to they were going to prove the existence of God without referring to the Bible. Well, that's what they said, except until the day before when they said, oh, never mind, we're going to mention the Bible. So it turned into an opportunity for them to evangelize on a televised stage. It was all a setup. So Ray Comfort got up there and did his insulting people into Christianity evangelical shtick, which I honestly will never understand. He sat down, then Brian Sapient came up and did his bit, and they sat down, they went back and forth. And if you're an atheist, you've probably seen it. And I thought the Rational Response Squad, my side, won the debate. Except I really didn't like the way they did it. I thought they sort of angrily Tony Orlando and Don their way across the pulpit and just sort of made us look a lot more mean. Now, there are things I know about that show now that I didn't know then. And I don't bear them any ill will. I think they did a good job with what they had. I said pulpit specifically because this debate, does God exist, happened at a church, really. And but the thing is if that's going to be our voice on the media, I can't have that. And that was the day that I said, okay, I'm going to be an activist and activism. And the thing about being an activist is a lot like saying you're going to be an astronaut. You know, okay, I'm going to be an astronaut now. But that's sort of divorced from the whole concept of becoming an astronaut. You can't just say that you're going to be an astronaut. You actually have to make it into space. And to be an activist, you need to go out and talk to people or join an organization. And I didn't know how to do that, so I sat on it for a year. And it took me moving here to Washington and meeting the Seattle Atheist people in order to make that happen. And I was making friends. I was having a really good time talking to people. And eventually, they said, Sam, we think you're doing a good job. Could you help us out, run for the board? I thought, okay, finally, a perfect opportunity for me to make my statement. And I said, let's not be jerks. No more jerk atheism. Let's go out there and be positive. And everybody's like, yes, positivism. Let's go out there and be nice and have fun. And I ran unopposed, so I won. And it was fantastic, let me tell you. And a bit of an ego boost, except for that whole running unopposed thing. And then, so we started as a group. I mean, I said that was my platform, but it ended up kind of being everybody else's platform, too. And we started working positively. And then we started looking, I said, well, what's our competition? Let's find the jerk atheists. And I looked around, and I looked pretty hard. And I couldn't find any. And that was a thing to me. And I realized that I thought this way about atheism because I bought a line based off of two things, jackasses on the internet and the media, because the way people see atheism is, as Mike says here, is a meta-analysis of 8 different atheism personalities. And it's not even the personalities themselves. You get these people up close, you watch them in debate, they're really nice people, but everybody sees that 30-second soundbite of him saying, of making a good point, and we all look like completely antisocial.
But even that, I found that, I have a friend who's a liberal Christian, and he used to have a really negative opinion of Richard Dawkins. Oh, he's so angry. And like that mention of, oh, I just saw him on South Park, that was also the way primarily he saw that. But then when he actually watched videos of Dawkins talking, he was like, wow, this guy isn't angry at all. He's actually pretty mellow and nice. And his opinion changed. Well, my friend is still a theist, but he loves hearing Richard Dawkins talk about science. And I think it's really important to mention that it is that meta-analysis, and I think a lot of people do the same thing with God, where it's not so much that they read the Bible themselves, they just take their pastor's word for it.
And the thing is things happened during my tenure on the board that I disagreed with, and we actually did a press release. Like, for example, I'm sure a lot of you remember the holiday sign in Olympia in 2000. It was 2008, I believe.
2008.
And I don't remember the exact wording, but it was kind of like, happy holidays, religious people are kind of dopey.
Well, it was about how religion hardens hearts and
arrests
minds.
I
have
you.
No problem with the statement of the sign. There's nothing on it I disagree with. I just think it was such a bad venue to do it.
I actually didn't really care for the statement myself, and
okay.
I thought it was kind of jerky. And I had some little enmity. And then I actually started meeting people from the organization that did it, that did the sign, the FFRF. And a lot of them were like, yeah, that ended up being kind of more jerky than we thought, and it didn't work out right. It certainly got the press in, though. And I'm like, yeah, okay, good point there. And their message has evolved since. And to the point where there are bus ads running in Chicago right now, which I think is just Sleep In Sunday or something like that.
Yeah.
It's really simple. It really makes the point. And it's backed up with something we're doing here in Seattle, where the inside they have quotes from atheists or prominent free thinkers. And I just can't find this new atheism movement that people are talking about. And to me, it seems like it's only new atheism because we're saying things now, where before we were quiet.
Yeah.
And that leads directly into really the platform of this TV show, the sort of the reason we're doing it, which is the fact that, I don't know what you take it away from here, is the fact that we've got no voice in the media.
That's true. I find that it's absolutely true that there isn't a lot of atheist-themed programming on television, radio, or anywhere else. I mean, although you could say that, like, say, Real Time with Bill Maher or Penn & Teller's Bullshit are both shows that have an atheist bent, and then they occasionally do an episode on religion. Well, if you look at Bill Maher's show, it's primarily a liberal political show, and Penn and Teller are primarily a libertarian-leaning skeptic show. In fact, most of the atheist media that you're going to see, period, are going to be in one of two places. One is bookstores, where you're going to see books by Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, and others. And the main one is the Internet. And I think the caller we had earlier made a big allusion to this. I'd go as far as saying that over 90% of atheist media is on the Internet. And there are plenty of great websites out there, things like Atheist Nexus, Richard Dawkins Foundation, The Reason Project, or Project Reason, Pharyngula, and others. And also you get people who also create other media, people like Thunderfoot, Freethinker, DPR Jones, Aaron Raw.
That would be Freethinker.
Yeah, Freethinker. Yeah, he's got one of the main guys who helped promote our show very early on.
How you doing?
And that's really where it ends. And I think that the only two explicitly atheist discussion shows on television right now are The Atheist Experience in Austin and Us, and they're both on public access.
And there's a point I want to make about that, but we've got...
I just want to make a quick point before I take the call. The fact that both of these shows have international viewers says something about the absolute absence that we have of any kind of atheist presence in the media. Again, the majority of our audience here and The Atheist Experience are through the Internet. And the fact that it shows the distribution power of the Internet, and the one way we can get any sort of foothold at all, and even then, it's incredibly small. According to some polls, atheists make up about 5 to 16%. I mean, that is just a wide margin with a lot of room for error. And we don't even have the low end of that spectrum. We don't even have that percentage of representation in the media. So a big part of this show is we want to join the conversation and have some representation in the media. We do have a call. John from Maple Valley, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What have you got for us, John?
Well, I would just like to clear up something that I've discovered in my own life about religion and atheism and knowing. What you guys are doing is really rejecting the belief system. Because within every human being is the desire to know the truth, not to believe. Believing is just buying somebody else's word. When you believe something, you've abdicated your sovereignty of knowing. Jesus and all these past masters that religions are based on had one theme they talked about. That is, the heavenly joy all men seek is already in your heart. Those answers are already within you. And religious people have given up that desire to know, and they're buying hearsay from people. They're not really Christians, they're Babylonians. And
that's a very good point, is it does say that in the Bible, but then they look to where a lot of this negativity is coming from. They're also finding in the Bible in other places. So, you know, some people try and take the good with the bad, and I have a lot of respect for that, but... you know, like I said, from our skeptical background, we tend to look to what we've discovered on a scientific basis about things, and that's where we make a lot more of our judgments.
Yeah, I care about whether my beliefs are true, and a big part of it is can I use these beliefs to make a reliable framework for which I can make accurate predictions? And
believing is not a foundation to be walking through life when your heart is pounding and your mind is pounding to know truth.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with that. I think that things that are independently verifiable, that I think we might be using the word believe and know differently. I think that there really isn't that big of a... There's a semantic difference, but I think generally...
There's a big, big difference.
Well, I think we're getting into semantics at that point.
Believing is admitting that you don't know.
Not necessarily. I think that belief...
Oh, yes, it is.
Saying, let me go from my definition that I've heard used, that belief is basically my assertion of a state of the world. It isn't the same as me just wishing for something. It isn't a state of the world that I want. It's something that I actually believe represents a state of the world. Like, I can believe that I can fly, but there's a way for me to find out that I'm wrong. I think a big part of it is I want to have, to the greatest degree possible, I want the things that I believe match up to reality as closely as possible. So I don't think we're disagreeing on anything. I think we might just be having a semantic argument.
I think some of the division here is happening is that you're talking about beliefs versus knowledge
on
sort of an abstract basis, and he's...
I'm talking about proof.
We're with you on proof.
Yeah, we're definitely with you on proof.
It's like flying. We know there are machines up there that can fly, so we've been it's proven to us that we can fly. To say that Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is at hand, it's available right now, and it's inside you. It's not in a temple, you're the temple. It's not in a religion, it's not in a belief. Your heart will understand truth when it hears it.
And
your mind is the one that confuses with no or with beliefs, wants to throw up beliefs in front of the desire to know. That's simply how I see it, and you guys are closer to understanding the true nature of God, what the masters in the past, even Socrates says, man, know thyself. With inside you are all the answers. And
when God chooses to provide us with some evidence to empirically make the decision about God, we'll be ready.
God is a word that triggers a... It either triggers a fantasy, because let's face it, the guy that lives up in the sky with the beard and stuff that's punishing people, that's a fantasy.
Yeah.
I'm an American. That's just a fantasy. I'm a Caucasian. That's a fantasy. I'm a human being. In fact is, I'm simply the simple breath that keeps me alive, that entered this body as a baby, and when I die, I'll leave. And everything the mind tries to understand in the world, if you know, you feel fulfilled and satisfied within you. If you believe, you live in the world of skeptation.
This is where beliefs become kind of difficult. That's what you believe, and that's okay. But I've got, like I said, I know
the stove is hot because I touched it and was burned.
Yeah.
Can you provide
the same evidence for the existence of, say, that breath entering your body? And again, I really don't know what else to say to you. I think we may be going in a bit of a circle, but I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your stepping out and trying to clear up some things in the world.
Sure, we appreciate
it. I appreciate that. Thank you.
We have a call.
Now.
Oh, thank you. We have another call, Mila from Bothell. Mila, what have you got for us today?
Mila?
Well, I was listening to John. Hello?
Hello. Mila, what have you got for us today?
Yeah, I was listening to John, and can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. We can hear you. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So I was listening to John and his insistence of lack of believing. But what I think might be interesting to adopt as a new platform for atheists is to say, I do believe strongly that there is no God.
From my perspective, I try to build what I choose to believe based off of empiricism and the process of science is what we've actually tested, what we know is true.
What's demonstrable.
And what's demonstrable. And the thing about a lot of these religious concepts is that there's no evidence. In some cases, there's no real clear way on how to get that evidence.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of a lot of these claims is that they're non-falsifiable, that they... overtly avoid having to deal with the sorts of questions which could either prove or disprove them. And I think that those sort of questions where if God moves around like a ninja and he evades every possible attack that you lay on this. Like, okay, can we make this the evidence of this being demonstrable? Is there an it to talk about? And they start talking about how it's outside of time and space. It's like, okay, we're done. I mean, until you prove that there's something, anything of any degree outside of time and space, or that it's possible to be outside of time and space, I'm not going to take that as an answer. I take that as a, can't see me moving the goalpost sort of thing. So,
I know. The only thing I meant.
Oh, go ahead.
The only thing I meant is that.
Could you turn on your set, please?
Them accusing us of being boring or whatever it is, if it's just stated with much more passion that you do believe that there is no God, and actually nobody is asking believers to prove that there is a God. It's just taken as a given.
Well,
why not the same way for non-believers?
Well, I don't necessarily say it's the same kind of assertion. Not all atheists, for instance.
We have to prove something.
I don't think I have to prove anything. I think that it's not the job of the skeptic or the disbeliever to have to prove that something doesn't exist. The burden of proof relies on the person making the claim. I just simply reject the really bad arguments that I've heard in its favor, because they don't hold up, because they amount to basically using choose-your-own-adventure logic or a riddle to try to define something into existence rather than demonstrating that it actually does. You don't have it's more than just creating a hole in our knowledge where God will fit. It's proving that that hole is filled by God in the first place. I can come up with all sorts of negative reasons why, I don't know, like Zeus or Bigfoot doesn't exist. But it's not my job. My job is to actually prove positively in an independently verifiable way that it does exist. I have to provide something demonstrable about that. And I think that's the important part. Is that it's not my job to disprove. And I also would mention that not all atheists take the stance that we have a positive belief there is no God. Atheism as a general definition just means the lack of belief in a God. It just means not theist. And you're going to get different takes on that. But again, I want to say thank you for your call, and we will hope that you watch us again in the future.
Sure. Good day.
Appreciate your effort.
All right, thank you. Should we try wrapping up our topic a little bit?
I think we ought, yeah.
I think it's important. We were talking about this wave of religious programming. There really is a Christian privilege that I don't think a lot of people understand that are in our culture. There is a tidal wave of religious programming, whether it's just Christianity alone. Let's just look at Christianity for the United States, since that's the dominant religion. There's a Trinity Broadcasting Network with 24 hours of Pat Robertson and people like him. There are three separate programs for Kirk Cameron and Ray Comfort just alone, including Way of the Master. They're Catholic cable networks, countless channels that have exclusively Christian programming. And then there are the multiple radio programs, networks in religious programming in multiple networks. We also have, ignoring the fact that there's also local programming, the religious program for people like Casey Treat, Mars Hill, etc. And in an environment like that, people like Dawkins and Hitchens and stuff like that can only make a dent. They may write a book once every other year, but the books that counter them, even those books specifically, I can think of like three separate books written specifically counter just Richard Dawkins' A God Delusion. So, and you look into any Christian bookstore, the Christian section of the religious section is by far the largest one there, encompassing more books than the rest of the religious books combined.
Now, I do want to make a point here what this show is about, why we personally have this show, is that it's not really, we're not evangelizing or trying to evangelize. We don't necessarily want to make you an atheist, and I'm not exactly certain that we're even capable of doing that.
It isn't our goal, certainly.
But what this show is about is to show you real to atheists in your community like us, and that we're friendly, we're human, we breathe the same air, eat the same food, and just to show you, to give you an idea of what our ideas are.
Yeah.
And there's other things that go into that, just the basic outreach, because there are a lot of atheists out there who don't know
they think they're alone.
I thought I was alone for a very long time, and if you if you think you're alone and you'd like to come out and meet us, right after the show,
4:30.
At 4:30, We will be at the Ram at, what is the name of it?
Northgate Mall.
Northgate Mall. I was going to say Westgate. That was wrong. Northgate Mall. And please stop by, have a drink, have a meal. Love to talk to you. As you know, come by, come friendly.
Definitely, yeah. You shouldn't come if your goal is to scream at us or hit us. But I guess when I was talking about just the glut of religious programming, I'm trying to create a context for what where we are in this. That even when it comes to programs that aren't primarily religious, they are overtly religious. Bill O'Reilly may be primarily a political commentator, but when Christianity comes up, he becomes its champion. So you hear this message sort of over and over again. So we're entering into a media environment where you don't hear from us. And even when we do get media coverage, a lot of times we don't get the opportunity to speak for ourselves. Like I know when Richard Dawkins' book first came out, there was a segment on CNN where they spoke with a round table of people, all of whom were religious, about atheism.
That was like a week after the face-off thing. It was really part of it. Is first that, and I see us, and I'm like, anger. And then I see CNN's take on it, and they're, here, let's talk about atheism with no atheists. And they're like, oh, they set fire to things, and they have no morality.
And, yeah, oh. you had two fundamentalists. One was Christian, one was Jewish, and then there was a sort of vaguely moderate Christian on the other side who ended up having to simply say, no, these people shouldn't show up. They have a right to simply talk. Where the other ones were talking about, oh, someone should shut them up.
Yeah.
And we weren't even allowed to represent ourselves in there and our ideas, where even the moderate was saying, oh, yeah, well, obviously they're wrong, but they have the right to talk. And that was the representation they got. I guess there was enough of a fallout from that that they actually did invite Richard Dawkins on to at least speak in his own defense the next week. But that's sort of where we are, is that you don't have to say anything offensive to offend people with atheism. If you look, for instance, at the billboards, the really controversial bus ads in the UK simply said, there's probably no God, so just relax and enjoy your life. That's it. That was enough to have people picketing and screaming.
We have quotes from prominent free thinkers that are well known. I mean, the people who had a real serious stake in our history and help build the country as it is, and we didn't have any other message attached to it, and I answer some of the voicemails that Seattle Atheist gets, and the response we got, while overwhelmingly positive, some of the things we got were really negative. And
really vitriolic.
Extremely vitriolic.
And we're in a really secular part of the country, and that's sort of where we're at. So a big part of this is we want to join the conversation. This is about us saying, beliefs matter, the consequences of beliefs is real, and we want to join that conversation. So that's what we're asking to do on this show. That may be all the time we have to really talk about this. We have a lot more stuff we'd really like to talk about, but really we want to be part of this conversation. We want to talk from our perspective, and we want to be represented.
And in the future, we welcome you to call us up, leave us emails, and help us carry forward this conversation.
Yeah, if you agree or disagree, I'd highly recommend go to our website, askanatheist.tv, and we welcome your calls, we welcome your emails, and we definitely want to thank you for that. So,
just a quick update about the website. We said last week that a podcast was coming, and that is definitely coming. It's my job. If you're waiting for it, blame me. And
blame Sam.
Yeah, me. And but it's definitely coming. You'll check iTunes, check the website. It'll be available shortly.
Absolutely. I think that may be all the time that we have for our show. We want to thank our callers, and we'd like to thank all of our viewers. We want to thank the people who are distributing us on YouTube and other websites.
Absolutely.
And we want to thank you for your time today. We hope you'll watch us tomorrow, or not tomorrow, but not next Sunday. Because of the 4th of July picnic, we're going to be playing a rerun next week. We will be back on the 11th. So again, we're going to be at 4:30. We're going to be at the Ram at Northgate. You feel free to join us. Thank you for your time. We here at Ask an Atheist say thank you for your viewership, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Have fun.